Welcome back to Channel 9 Live. I'm John Papa, and we're here all day. No, actually, I'm just here for half an hour. So we're going to talk about Silverlight with a bunch of good fellows here next to me. And what you want you to do is text them. Yeah, why don't we tweet our questions into pound Channel 9 Live. That's pound CH9 Live. Please do that. We'll get a bunch of questions queued up. And while we're waiting for everybody here, I'll introduce our Silverlight TV episode number 69, our 69th one here today. We've got three great guests. Let's start here with the shiny man, since everyone blinded by the light.
Yeah, you like
wrapped
that?
Wrapped up like a...
It's my Azure suit. It's because I'm all in.
You're all in. So who is this gentleman here? What do you do?
My name's Ward Bell. I'm VP of Technology at IdeaBlade. We make a product to help you build applications that consume their data-driven applications and they consume them on any .NET client.
So you use a lot of Silverlight-type stuff to build cool apps.
Silverlight is definitely it. It's
so
bomb.
You know something about that. And you also have a session here this week, don't you, at Mix?
I do. There's a lot of interest among people who build business applications for the desktop in how they could have a presence on the phone. And I'm going to suggest some thoughts that they should keep in mind as they some sort of guidelines for how to think
Great.
About that.
And so people can watch it online later. What's the title of your session so they can look for it?
It starts with all thumbs, colon, and then goes on from there.
All thumbs.
Yes. All thumbs.
Just look for the man with the shiny blue shirt. And we got a guy who needs no introduction over here. What's your name, sir?
I'm Laurent Bunion.
Laurent Bunion.
Yes.
Thank you.
And I'm a director of user experience integration for IdentityMine. I had my session, so I'm now in...
And what was your session?
My session was Deep Dive MVVM,
which
was pretty much a continuation of what we did last year, which was an introduction to MVVM. So this time we went really all deep with a model view model. And the idea was to, I collected so many emails with questions about how do you do that, from people who had seen the
right.
first one. That this year I went and I answered those questions, hopefully, satisfactorily.
Right, so folks who don't know, you did a session last year, a very popular session on MVVM,
yes.
One open call with the voting that all of you out there voted for Laurent to do last year at MIX. It was very successful.
Yep.
It was kind of more of a beginner level MVVM, and this
Absolutely.
Year, much deeper dive.
Absolutely,
which,
yeah.
It was a packed house.
It was, I was lucky to have a full room, so I was very happy about that.
Always I think there was a
nice.
Reason it was full. I think you were pretty good.
Well, what I liked is that I could see people nodding along as I was talking, which meant that they got it, and I got some excellent questions after the session, which
right.
means that they are using that stuff in production. And that makes me very happy, so yeah.
And that's
good
great,
thing.
And you and I also recorded a Silverlight TV episode that will be on the air in a couple of weeks, too.
That's very good, I'm looking forward
further.
To see that again, yeah.
So not to leave anybody else out, we've got a third guest over here, and you are?
My name is Luigi Rosso, I'm the CTO at Archetype. We do a bunch of stuff, rich interactive applications, a lot of Silverlight work, both on the desktop, online, and on the phone.
And just to explain everybody what he does for a living, what he does is he actually works out. He's a personal trainer of Scott Guthrie. He's the one who gave him the six-pack abs in the great 3D demo that we did in the keynote today. And you guys had some other roles in the keynote, did you not?
Yeah, we did a couple other things. We worked on some of the stuff yesterday, and we worked on a couple different products and things that are going to be available soon, libraries
right.
and such.
And the demo that I did today was actually written by
Luigi. The house builder.
Yes. The house.
He forgot thing. Already. We've been through the keynote. So definitely want to get you all. Thank you for coming on. Anybody out there on Twitter, you want to tweet your questions about Silverlight, we got a 3D expert, we got business application experts, and a guy with a blue shirt who happens to be a very good friend of mine. So I'm going to tease him incessantly throughout this whole interview.
Thank you, John.
Please, tweet Channel 9 Live, CH9 Live. We'll get some of your questions on air. So we've got a lot of stuff going on at MIX here. What would you guys give me your impression about the keynote?
Today's keynote, absolutely rocked. The Silverlight 5 stuff, because I'm going to talk about the Silverlight
yeah,
stuff.
It's Silverlight TV.
It is Silverlight TV, and it was wonderful to see all of the solidity of the Silverlight 5 coming out. The 3D stuff, I think, really excited people.
Mm-hmm.
But the knockout for me, and I think for many people, was the Kinect demonstration with the astronomy. It was so moving.
What a blast.
It was one of the most moving demonstrations I have ever seen.
It was amazing.
And anybody who missed it, they got to go see it.
Definitely. Yeah. That was one of the best keynotes that I've ever been involved with. It was pretty fantastic there. So we have our first question from Tim Heuer.
From our friend Tim.
Yeah.
Tim Heuer. I'll mispronounce
Hauer,
his name on purpose.
That? He must be German or something.
Yes, he must be.
I must believe.
And I think he's at the Not At Mix at Twitter right now. So the question is from Tim Heuer. Question for Ward. Does Barry Manilow know you raided his wardrobe?
He doesn't yet, but I hear the police are on their way. So this is going to be a very brief interview. I'll be out of here soon.
So those who don't know, Ward has a general theme of showing up at these events in very extravagant outfits.
I don't know what you're talking about.
I have no. Oh, geez. So, yeah, the keynote, we did a lot of good Kinect stuff and Silverlight. What did you think about the Silverlight stuff in the keynote?
The Silverlight stuff was great. And, in fact, you know, if I can say that, I think what was shown was great. But don't forget that there is even more stuff coming, right?
Yes.
In the beta already,
features.
Right? Yeah, yeah. Yes. And there is even more stuff in the beta coming up, which, I mean, you know, I do MVVM stuff. And a lot of things that were added in Silverlight 5 beta, which is already available now, will definitely help people who do do especially a lot of things with bindings, for example, with the binding debugging. You have
Ancestor,
the find mode, to go up the visual tree.
So can you explain what is the find?
Sure.
Relative source find ancestor.
Exactly. So when you do a binding, you always have a source for the binding, and the source is an object which is going to be, you know, where the property lives, mm-hmm. which is the value of the binding, right? And you have different ways to assign that object. One way is to say just source equals and then a static resource, for example. You can do element name.
Which you need
to,
a static resource.
And there is one which is a little bit less known because it's very new in Silverlight. So I think it was introduced in Silverlight 4, actually, which is the relative source, right?
Right.
And relative source allows you to find an element relatively to the place where you are as in the visual tree. So the one in Silverlight 4 is a self, pretty much.
Mm-hmm. That was in WPF, the new Relative Source Find Ancestor.
Yeah, so all that is actually coming from WPF, so it's fully compatible. And the new one in Silverlight 5 is a Find Ancestor, which allows you to walk the tree and to go and say, okay, I know that I am in a grid, so let's go and find that grid.
Let's explain why this is, because we're telling the technical thing, but
sure.
The classic case is the combo box, where you've got, let's say, an order and you want to know the status and it's in a grid and you've got orders. And the row in the grid has to show that it's the current order or shipped order. Mm-hmm. But where did you get the list of options? Well, they're somewhere they come in from some source
and
way up high.
They're not in the data context.
They're not in the data context and you can't reach them and therefore you can't bind to them. So binding the list in the combo box is the classic example.
Yep.
And we've had all kinds of workarounds and we cut right to the chase.
And this makes it really, really simple to do. And actually, I think it was used in the keynote demo. We didn't mention it,
but
when you download that code, that's in there, isn't it?
Yeah, it's totally in there. We used it for the combo box actually on that construction list at the end. All of the different options for, say, the doors. We had different materials on the doors. Instead of having to go into every single view model and populate a list of doors, we had a list of available doors in the construction list, which was a big object that contained all the individual items. And then we just did ancestor find source. You know, it went to the.
Now everybody's snoozing at home. They're thinking we're talking about combo boxes.
Yeah.
But you know, this
combo
is
boxes
what,
are cool.
Yeah, I mean, this is what we
it
do
makes
all
it
day
so
long.
Much easier.
We
really.
Do this stuff all day long. You know,
a lot of these features that came out in Silverlight 5 really do help make your life easier.
Uh-huh.
That's kind of the point. It's not the whiz bang, but it makes your life easier, especially guys like us here.
Yeah.
So let's get back to some of the questions. We've been getting a couple tweets in at Pound Channel 9 Live. Thank you very much. So we've got some questions from Martin Trodson. I sound like I'm speaking like Aaron Burr. So we've got, is it possible to use smart cards to authenticate and login in SL web apps? So can we use smart cards to do like authentication or login? It's like RS readers or anything else like that. Has anybody done or thought about that?
Go
ahead.
So we actually tackled it in a few different ways, and I think that the best answer we've found so far is doing it in the web app. And then letting the credentials go through to Silverlight.
So doing it in the web app, which has access to the certificate that it's using.
Right, right. Particularly in IE, it works very well. It's a problem that I think that's the best way to tackle it. That's the best solution that we've found so far. I know that there are a lot of other paths that people have tried and have taken mm-hmm. and have explored,
sure.
but
mm-hmm.
it gets very messy and very, very complicated.
Right, I can imagine a lot of enterprises would like to use something like that.
Yeah, we get a lot of requests from our clients for that, and that's definitely something that's very important to solve.
So basically, the server, you get all that stuff done, and then the server creates some kind of a security context that it sends down to the Silverlight application mm-hmm. on the client, and the client says, yeah, that looks good to me, and then
Silverlight plays nice, right? So it's just tacking along.
Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, cool, cool, great. So we got another question here. It's one from earlier today from Solis Swede. I love that. That's great Twitter handles. Tell us about the supported 3D formats. Are Collada animations supported? So I mentioned earlier in an interview with Scott Gu, and this came up, that I would defer this question to Luigi when he came on.
So this is a low-level 3D API. You can support any format that you want. What we built for the House Builder app, which is actually going to be available as open source in, I believe, the end of the month or so.
Soon, yes.
Soon, yeah. we built in Collada support. And the reason why is because Collada is a really good format. It's an interchange format. It can get your models from one package to another really well. It supports all kinds of data structures, all kinds of also animations and so on. What we built is basically just model support, textured models. We have a couple of sample shaders in there. We have a basic shader that just supports normal UV texturing, and we have a normal mapping shader that you can also use. And we take care of generating tangents and binormals and all that stuff in the importer. But for right now, it's just geometry. There's no animation. But you could very easily add that in. There's no reason why you can't.
Are there any other model formats that we could use? What are some of the other popular model formats?
You could take a look at FBX. You could take a look at .x. There's a lot of other formats. Collada is nice and easy because it is XML, and so it's very human readable. It's easy to open it up. It's highly, highly supported by a lot of different platforms. So you can get them out of. I think we were using Maya and Cinema 4D, but you can use almost any platform out there that has a plugin for Collada.
I think the great thing about the application that you built goes on. I know we built this application over the last, 5 or 6 weeks, right?
Yeah.
But over that time period, you spent a lot of time, because I put a constraint up front of make it so it's reusable, it's a real-world app, it's
got
absolutely. MVVM built into it.
It is, yeah, absolutely.
And you can load models. And looking at the code, it's very obvious where you're loading the models and how this works. So it should be extensible.
Yeah. Well, the models are actually data bound in. We have a view model of, I think there's a house selector view model that has a list of all the different houses. There's simply a path to where the DAE model lives, the Collada format model lives. And we load those up, and it's actually loaded asynchronously, so it's coming through a web server, and then we load down the textures and so on. We actually load the texture, the shaders asynchronously too, so you could change them at runtime.
So can you explain a little bit to people out there who may not be into the deep level 3D? What is a shader? What's a texture? What are you talking about with those?
So a texture is something that, if you imagine at the most simple level, if you have a 3D polygon, which is 3 points, let's say, in a triangle,
right.
A texture is something that gets mapped on top of that. In order to make that look like something, you could just fill it in all purple.
So think of the polygon as kind of a wireframe that you're putting together.
Mm-hmm.
And
exactly.
Then you put the texture on top.
Just layer that.
The texture is the detail. It gives you a lot of detail in its information. It's the visuals that actually get shown and then warped in 3D space.
Right.
Now, a shader is something that gets applied onto that surface to make it look however you want. You can sample from a texture. You can do a lighting equation if you wanted to, and you can combine textures. You can do all kinds of things. A shader gives you the freedom. So the pixel shader, at least, gives you the freedom to make that look however you want. The vertex shader, instead, transforms things. It puts things in 3D space.
Right, and the vertex shader is what you're using to rotate the house. And
we're using that for the camera, exactly.
The camera
in that model, or in that demo, we're using it to set up the camera. We're setting we're sending over a couple of parameters, like the position of the camera, the orientation of the camera.
And all this can run on the GPU, which is the great part.
That was the amazing thing.
Yeah.
It really moved so smoothly.
Yep.
As you were piloting your way through inside the house and turning corners and seeing Scott go on the right,
he
was wearing a blue shirt.
Yes, he was.
What happened with that?
Even though the texture was actually pretty complex, because you could see the cracks in the concrete and everything, that was pretty cool.
Yeah, I had to talk to the real estate agent about that. That's why I got that big discount on the house. So, that's really great. So again, we got some more questions coming in from Pound Channel Live. We got KD8FWV. Any possibility to access the read and write reports for human interface devices? That's from Eric. Anybody doing any access for read-write for HID devices?
I'm not quite sure exactly what the question is about, but if they talk about devices, right? So you do have COM access, right? So that might be that.
So pen readers, for example,
pads
or any other kind of.
Yeah, so a lot of our customers do that actually in elevated permissions through COM.
So you can do that now in Silverlight 4 through elevated permissions in COM.
Yes.
And in Silverlight 5, you have other options.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, in Silverlight 4, you have to be outside of the browser in elevated permission.
Sure.
In Silverlight 5, you can do that in the browser with elevated permission, which is pretty cool because it allows an even simpler mode of delivery for the applications.
Right.
That's quite nice. Other things coming up are, the socket support, right, which opens, of course, the possibility to many things, right, many additional things. Right?
Okay, great. Yeah. That's great. So we got a question here from Caleb Jenkins. Hey, Caleb.
How are you, man?
Yeah. Hey, guys, anyone doing any unit testing with RIA services and MVVM?
Yeah. Well, unit testing, so...
What's testing?
So unit testing, basically, what you want to unit test, it really depends how you do your application. And usually when I use MVVM with RIA services, what I do is that I consider the RIA services as being really a data service, which I'm going to call from my view
right,
models.
It's irrelevant what data you're getting it from.
Exactly.
Resource is just a place to give you data.
Exactly. So what I presented actually yesterday in the session applies to that too. You know, if you consider your RIA services, your you know domain context, etc.
Sure.
A high level data service, if you want, you can consider that as being you know what you're calling, right? And the view model can be tested just by abstracting that, basically. So
right.
That's
if
the
you
same,
abstract the services yeah. out of the view model, you're just testing the methods in the view model.
Yeah, yeah
that's
exactly.
generally. I mean, that depends, of course, on moving the persistence interaction out of the view model, so
yeah.
that the view, so there's
right.
an abstraction there, a repository or a data service
exactly.
or whatever you want
some
to call it.
Some guy I know did a really great session about doing
yeah.
services and abstraction with MVVM.
Could have happened.
Oh, I don't know his name.
Yeah. Selfless and shameless plugs.
Is
you
that
know?
The guy whose book is served to put monitors on? You saw that tweet, right?
Yes, I did.
Yeah.
Yes, I did. I saw a lot of tweets during the keynote, too, or after the keynote. I wasn't tweeting on the keynote.
Oh, really?
But about the prison uniform that I'm wearing today. So, yes, they let me out of the yard. It's where I've been doing my exercise lately. Anyway, let's move on to another question here. Soulless Swede. I love that title, man. That's great. Do you expect any 3D loaders to be added to the Silverlight toolkit? That's a good question. So 3D loaders themselves, which right now, let me explain this. What I think he's really asking is in 3D, we've got the low-level APIs that we were talking about, which gives you a lot of power and flexibility. Mm-hmm. But it may not be as simple to get up and running in some cases to do things.
Mm-hmm.
So it'd be nice to have some wrappers, if you will,
yeah.
to help load some of the models.
Yeah.
I don't know if you guys can answer being the toolkit yeah. or not. I don't think we had plans in the toolkit yet, but I know you've got some things in the works.
Yeah, I mean, we're really excited about getting some of our stuff out there open sourced. So I think that that's definitely going to happen. If it's the toolkit, that would be phenomenal. If it's through
that,
some other
that's
avenue,
a good idea.
That's, yeah.
But yeah, it'd be great, because when we started talking about doing the 3D models, we didn't just want to write a 3D demo, throw it out there. We wanted to have both an example people can follow and then something they can use to reload.
Mm-hmm.
So
exactly.
you can actually grab the code.
Yeah, we wanted to get something out there that actually was reusable and that was robust enough so that you could actually use it with a bunch of different formats, which is why we chose Collada mm-hmm. to start with.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's the natural one. It could definitely, the actual import process that we do for getting the mesh into a hardware-friendly buffer is applicable to any format out there. So basically, there's two libraries. One library is our Collada load library, and then another one is the library that does the mesh processing. That mesh processing library could be used with any other loader out there. So you just need to
right.
build another importer, and you're in good shape to plug
yeah, and
the
I didn't
show,
show the code to me. Show the code briefly, but in there, you've got a library called Pina.
Yeah, it's our Pina Collada library.
Pina Collada. And then you got a library. There's another library in there called XNA.math. Would you like to talk about what we included in that?
Well, the XNA math library is something that comes from XNA, and that's essentially all the power of the you know existing XNA math library, which is phenomenal. You know, any kind of geometric operation that you need to do, matrices, planes, vectors, and so on, that's all in there.
So you don't
Quaternions.
Have to figure out how to do that. You
no,
just
no,
use
it's
that library.
There. It's tried and tested. It's been used for a long time in mm-hmm. XNA. It's very powerful.
That's the stuff that makes Warden and
yeah,
I,
yeah,
old guys,
yeah.
actually feel better. So.
My trig is a little
yeah.
little old.
You still need to do your own collision detection, but yeah. that's you know that's a discussion for another library.
So can I ask you a question about the delivery of this? And I'll lead into it, because I know, for example, Laurent, your MVVM Lite is now deliverable through NuGet.
Yeah. For a while, actually.
I'm seeing a lot of interest now among the Silverlight community in being able to get some of these packages
that'd
into
very
there.
Cool.
And so is any of the kind of stuff that you're talking about, is that a possible delivery vehicle? Does that make any
sense? I don't see why not. I think yeah. that
can
would
you
be...
do that this afternoon,
this
Luigi?
Afternoon.
Is that okay? We'll make it now.
Yeah. Maybe we yeah. can just ping the community a bit, right? And I love your stuff, right? But there is the Boulder project,
yes.
you
yes.
know, which is really a very well-known project, right? And I just saw that...
By Einar. Einar,
yeah,
yes,
exactly.
Yes,
with also
Einar.
A Silverlight MVP, actually released a version which works with
this
the
morning.
Silverlight 5. Yeah, exactly. So he had that prepared for a while, and he hit the publish button this morning.
It's amazing that he knew Silverlight 5 was coming out today.
I don't know how they know
it.
That. Yeah, exactly.
You know,
yeah.
You have all these people who have this amazing clairvoyance.
It's yeah. amazing. Yeah, yeah.
yeah.
Einar's.
And I think Boulder is cool because he can deliver to a number of platforms.
It's amazing.
And now including Silverlight 5, so, which
so
is
So Boulder
cool, yeah.
isn't a competitor to Silverlight 5's 3D. It's
no.
actually a helper. In a lot of ways,
yeah,
enable 3D
yeah, exactly. So when I talked to Einar about that, what he said is that the thing that is in Silverlight 5 3D, and I think you agree with that, is really, like you said, it's a low-level stuff, right? It's an enabler for the high-level stuff that other people like you, like Einar, are building, and there is a striving community.
And we're talking
so,
Balder, Balder. If anybody
exactly.
wants to go out there and look for it.
Yeah, not
that's great.
Not like. You know, somebody who is
not
older than
Boulder,
somebody else. Yeah,
excuse
exactly.
me, was that a joke about
no,
airlines?
No, I wouldn't dare.
We wouldn't go there.
We didn't make it that far already, so anyway. Now,
Oh, okay, sad. There is a precision on the HID device. So.
Yes. So.
Oh, right, right.
What I mean is we have our own HID device and don't want to install COM. So could you use PInvoke to interface with HID devices?
Well, I suppose. I mean, if the so PInvoke is in Servlet 5, right? So there is a way to use
full
that.
Full trust.
Yeah, exactly. And that of course gives you the full the full responsibility and the whole power and the whole responsibility which comes with that, right, to access pretty much anything you want, right?
And so if I could kind of sum it up, I guess what we're really saying here is that could you interface with HID devices using, like, the Windows 32 APIs and Servlet? Yes, you could if you're running full trust.
Yes.
And then you're running PInvoke, and you knew what those Win32 APIs were.
Exactly. And the good news is that in Servlet 5, you don't have to be out of the browser anymore to do that. You can do that in the browser, which opens, of course, a whole range of possibilities.
Right.
But it's still full trust, so you have to...
Right, and the corporate policy has to allow it.
So those of you out there
who don't want people running PInvoke,
you
can stop that.
Yeah,
all right,
yeah. Business this isn't for your home user creating their flower shop.
No, exactly, exactly. and the user has to accept that.
Exactly.
So there is really a security thing.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. So we talked about some of the things in the keynote. What did you like about earlier stuff in the keynote? Windows Phone. How did that come across?
Earlier, so the phone. I wanted to say something about that. Actually, the phone amazed me because we've been doing phone work for a long time, right? And I knew a few things that were coming up, so I was excited about that. Actually, we did a couple of the demos that were shown. So I was really excited about that, but
your company did the IRC demo, for example.
Yeah, exactly,
So
Joby, one of our developers, Joby Joy, did that. Great,
he'll be
great
on Servlet TV next week.
Oh, that's cool. That's cool. He's a great guy, really, and very talented. But the thing which amazed me is that you managed to surprise me with additional stuff that I was not even expecting, you know. And that was so cool. I mean,
so what kind of additional stuff did you?
Well, you know, the XNA composition that we saw, these kind of things. We might have heard about it, but to see that really working.
How'd you like that emulator? The new emulator.
Oh, the stuff with the emulator.
The new emulator. So the new emulator, I knew about it because I had the chance actually to work with the guys who do the tools to do some kind of user research, you know, and I gave them some tips on how to improve the user experience. So I knew about that, but I didn't know it was going to be released. I didn't know it was nowhere near ready, you know, and when I saw that, and then you have the tool where you have the simulation of the geolocation, which is great because I don't want to always be in Redmond, even though I like Redmond, but I'm in Switzerland. I want to be in Switzerland.
Yeah, it's nice. Now in the emulator, you can actually simulate the geolocation somewhere else, as opposed to always being in Microsoft campus.
Yeah, exactly. You can also simulate the orientation. You can simulate the shake.
And the movement. The movement of the location is really cool, I think.
Yeah.
What kind of scenarios does this enable?
Because
we're running out of time. I wanted to throw in a there for the live tile stuff, because for a business
application. Yeah, the deep linking.
For a business application guy, that's exactly what you want. You got that order,
so
you want to park it on the front.
So you don't just go right to the front of the application, you can link right into a particular
page. That's going to be so useful
for us.
So
that's fantastic, and the other thing which personally makes me super happy, because I had an application that I couldn't do because of that, the possibility to have those agents, you know, and then to have them ping back the application after half an hour or maybe 20 minutes before you have to get on the train. You just send...
It really is much more interactive now, so you can just click
and it's all on the phone. And it's all on the phone, because you can do that with push notifications, but then you have to set up a server, which is very difficult.
Yeah. And you only got 16 before...
Exactly.
Sometimes
you
just don't need to do that. There's a quicker way.
And here it's all local.
We have lots of questions coming in here. Just, you can tweet us here at hash. CH9Live on Twitter. So please send your questions for these fellows.
Uh-huh.
And I did want to take a quick moment to talk about the Scott Guthrie rotating model that you put on the phone, Luigi. That was something you did on desktop earlier.
Yeah, that's right. That's what we did for Firestarter. That was the model.
So how hard or easy was that to go from desktop over to phone?
It was actually surprisingly easy. You know, we did have a guy who's very good at getting models loaded and working on them and tweaking them and such. And obviously there's different, you know, on the desktop, that version of the model, that application runs with a very, 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 very high resolution model. And you can tell, it looks great. But I think that we actually got it to look, if not just as good, we got it close to as good on the phone. And the nice thing is that on the phone, you still have access to all the XNA importer libraries, right? For the Firestarter, we had to build a custom importer. For the phone, it was just XNA. So we just went back to, I think it was in Maya that he was working, worked the mesh down, exported FBX, imported an XNA, and it was ready to go.
And the perf on that was actually pretty darn good looking through there.
Yeah, the animations were really, really good. I was really surprised to see that, you know, when the camera positions were interpolating and stuff, that was really, really fast. It was
a little bit too
fast
at one point.
At one point, a little too fast. Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Are you referring to the point where Scott gave everybody in the front row a little?
Yeah, pretty much. He kind of flashed everybody in the audience.
That was
right?
A setup, or was that actually? I don't know answer to that, but I loved it. Everybody loved
Why
it.
Why are you interested?
I don't know. I don't know, it kind of blinded me for a while, so yeah. I'm like, oh, you know.
No, that came off really, really well. There's a lot of great stuff that came out with it. Well, what kind of work did are you going to take advantage of from Silverlight 5 with your company now?
Well, because most of the stuff is business, and we haven't yet wrapped our heads around 3D and how to bring 3D to business, it was some of those other kinds of features that we were talking about that just make the platform more solid and easier mm-hmm. to work with. You know, that's why we were droning on in the beginning about the combo box, but that stuff matters to us.
What about the debugging?
Oh, the debugging. That? The debugging is so cool because, you know, that has been a killer for many people for a long time, mm-hmm. is to not know why your binding isn't there.
And your output window's saying, binding exception or something.
But it's in there amidst all the other stuff. You look it around for
I've
it.
I've got 50 fields bound. Which one
is
the problem?
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. And you cannot see it, especially if you're desperate. You cannot see that one letter off, the misspelling, the capitalization thing.
Mm-hmm. Imagine if that happens
because you don't have your glasses.
Yeah, it could. Yeah. I can't see anything. I code blind anyway. You know,
Which is good. You can put the helmet now because you saw the Kinect demo
with
the helmet.
Yes.
That was so inspiring.
I'm going to program with that.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
I was so cool.
I love the lounge chair though. Who doesn't love that when I can get the beer that way?
That was great. Clint was awesome in there, although I did suggest him that he create the electric chair instead of the lounge chair originally.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, there was a little bit of liability.
Yeah.
We put him together with that.
Yeah, I met Clint just before the demo, and I told him to break a leg, which is what you say, you know, before they go on stage, and he told me, well, you know, I might. So, yeah, now I know why.
Yeah, we were a little concerned about Clint going into this. So.
Yep.
Yeah, he's got to top it off. You know, last year he had some great stuff. This with the T-shirt.
I
don't know how you're going to top that. That chair was just. I want that chair.
I don't know. I suggested maybe some kind of levitation flying outfit, but he wasn't too hot for that yet.
Okay.
So cool. So I want to remind everybody we have some great stuff coming along. We got Pound Channeline Live. Lots of questions were coming in early.
That's a hash.
Hash.
Yes.
Sorry.
Hash.
International. International. It's a hash. They changed it. It used to be at Channel 9 Live.
Okay.
They're trying to trick me. So we got a question here from Roy Cornelison. Roy Cornelison.
Right.
Will some of the new phone APIs, such as local database, also be available in Silverlight 5? So the new feature in Windows Phone we had was basically instead of just IsoStory, now you can do SQL Server CE and do offline storage in there.
Yep.
You know, in Silverlight 5, the answer to that quickly is, and I'll take one of these. If you guys don't mind, basically in Silverlight 5, we're working on figuring out what features to move from phone. It's definitely something we're looking at. It's not something we're announcing at this time, but you know, if we have good use cases for it, and is this something that something interesting to you guys to see in Silverlight Desktop?
I think there are, you know, it's always a question of how can you really enable the community to build something which could do that? Right.
Should the Sterling team do it, or is there anything in the community now?
Well there's there Sterling. You know, we're all talking Sterling, right? Jeremy Lickness.
Yeah.
Go check it out, Sterling, Jeremy Lickness project. It's in CodePlex.
Yes, it's a great offline database that we use.
So the question is, you know, always the same with those framework issues, right? The question is really, what can you do to make the life of the people who do the, you know, the open source stuff easier? And then after that, if there is still a need, right? I think the real reason maybe why the SQL thing was added on the phone is that people who come from Windows Mobile are really used to have that. Mm-hmm.
They're used to having SQL on the Windows Mobile.
And I saw a lot of people in the community complaining about the fact that they didn't have it yet, you know? And now they have it, so they are happy. Now, for people like me who come from the Silverlight side of things, who are actually used to do things a little bit differently. So we work a lot with services.
Sterling works on Silverlight and on phone, right?
Yeah, it does.
So that's
in addition, it does. Yeah, so that's a good option. So personally, I would even, I think I would prefer to see rather an enablement. Is that the word? I would rather see you enable.
Do the things that we can't do and
exactly.
let us do the things that
we
can
do. Exactly.
Because there's so, you know, we're out there to support the success of Silverlight, and we need the foundation. So work on that foundation.
And I think we have time for one more question. So let's take this question here from that Joe G. I remember you from earlier. Ward, this is a question for you, Ward.
Yes?
Put on your data guy hat. He doesn't wear, you want to see the hats he wears. your thoughts on SQL Server CE support.
my thoughts on SQL.
Yeah, I think earlier we mentioned here, you know, maybe you build a lot of enterprise data type applications. Would that help any or any of your customers?
Well, absolutely, because performance is really important, and a lot of our customers have the sort of relatively static data that they would like to keep on the client. Mm-hmm. And so the ability to get it down there and leave it there and not have to go back to the server mm-hmm. to get products, to get the various long type lists.
It has a link to SQL API.
It's all sitting right there. Yep. So with a product like ours, which can simultaneously look both across the net and at the local resource, maybe good things could happen
it
for you.
It took him a half an hour, but he got the
had to get it in there.
Well, it will be stored robustly. There will be easy ways to index
absolutely.
The data.
Because ISO store is fine, but it's really hard to work with.
And one thing we have to remember is that, I mean, here in the U.S., you're very, very connected. In Europe, we are not as connected as you, so we need solutions to work offline.
Connected meaning the network connectivity with the phone?
I mean, first of all, it's not as good as here. Second of all, I'm in Switzerland. I'm very fast in Germany, where I pay like 10 times the data plan because I'm roaming, you know? So I don't want to do that. I need my data on the phone. So anything which is making it easier is really welcome.
That's great. That's great.
And performant.
Performance, which was the other phone thing, the fact that your application has a chance to still be live, I mean, in memory if not turned on, so that when you switch back, that's the other thing I really took away from the phone demonstration today.
Yeah, really phenomenal stuff coming.
It seemed like almost every feature that came out with the phone today was related in some way to performance or speeding up the application.
Well, that's the major criticism, right? That's really the major thing that people are talking about, right? Like the scrolling thing, and you did some work in that, right? And
Marketplace. That's the other one, the marketplace stuff.
Yeah, well, the marketplace is another thing, for sure. So it's a huge improvement. The whole decoding, one thing which for us was really hard, right, is the whole decoding the picture on the UI thread. Which is, you know, the major reason why our list box don't scroll as fast as it should, right?
In
the Twitter app, for example, etc. And that's going to just enable us to make much better apps. So, yeah, kudos on that.
Cool. Mm. So what kind of applications do you guys see yourselves building in the future with Silverlight?
You know, I can start. We are actually going to build a lot of Slate stuff in the near future with Silverlight out of the browser, most probably.
Cool.
Possibly with WPF, because WPF is still a first-class citizen of the PC.
WPF still around as well?
Absolutely.
You
so
have
usually
choices.
You have choices,
you
exactly.
Have choices.
And it makes sense to use WPF from time to time. I said WPF 3 times. I have to tell it 5 times.
I'll say it for you. Okay, cool. WPF.
Okay, let's go.
So we turn to WPF TV. Well, I want to thank everybody. We've just run out of time here.
Sorry about that.
Thank you guys, Luigi, Laurent, and Ward, Shining Blue Man. You just started the Blue Man Group, right? Thank you all for coming on, and we have another segment coming up very soon. Thanks a lot.